Daf Lamed Gimel Amud Aleph, and we're up to Maskif LeAbaye. So let's just backtrack a little bit so we know where we're holding. We're always trying to figure out, in a case where there's an overlap between Mammon and Malkus, what do we do? And the general rule seems to be that we give a punishment of Malkus, that's Rabbi Yochanan, and we alleviate him from the Mammon. And that's our application of the principle of Kedei Rishoso, Mishum Risha Achas Atom Machayvo. There were two exceptions to the rule. One was Edim Zomimim, and the other was Chovel Bechavero. And in these two cases, Rabbi Yochanan would have to admit that instead of giving Malkus, we make him pay. In the case of Edim Zomimim, the Gemara has a clear-cut derivation from the Pasuk, V'asisem lo kasher zomim lasos li'ochid. Because in that context, the Torah says, Yad B'Yad. And that's Dover Anitam Yad B'Yad. In Chol B'Chavero, there also seems to be a very serious, reliable Yalfusa to establish that you pay rather than get Malkus, even though he violates the law of Pen Yosef. And that's because in the Pasuk it says, Kein Yinasein Bo. And that's called the Dover Sheish Bo Nesina, and that's referring to paying Mama. However, we have here on Lamed Gimel Amud Aleph a sheet of Rabbi Eliezer, and he says that the reason why Edim Zomimim pay and they don't get Malkus is not because of Beferish Ripsa Torah Edim Zomim L'Tashlumim, as we saw before, but for a different reason. And that's because there's no possibility of Asra in the case of Edim Zomim. So we started this sugya of trying to figure out why there's no possibility of Asra in Edim Zomim. And we began with the Shita of Rava. So that's where we want to start today, and then we'll get to Maskif LeAbaye. So Rava says the following, Misrei Bahu Emas. When could we possibly give him the Hasra? Just logistically, there's no possibility of giving him a Hasra. And why is that? So Gemara says the following, Nisru Bumei Kara, if we're going to give him Hasra, let's say an hour before he gives his Edus, Amre Ishtalayon. We have a principle that Hasra always has to be given right before the Avera. If there's too much of a time gap between the Hasra and the Avera, then we may raise the possibility that he forgot about the Hasra. And Hasra is Batul Mevutal.
What does that word literally mean, do you know?
Ishtalayon means to forget.
Thank you.
Yes, Shichacha in Aramaic is called Ishtalayon. Nisru Behu Bishas Maisa, so let's go the obvious way. Let's give Masra right before he testifies. So Gemara is afraid, Parshe Velo Mishade, even if he's telling the truth, if you scare the daylights out of him, he's going to say, Mali Velitzarzu, why do I want to get involved in giving testimony? If I know that the ramifications are so severe, Nisru Besof, so let's give Masra after his Edus, Maida Hava Hava. The Gemara thinks that a Hasra after the Maisa, after the Edus, is meaningless. What point is there to warn someone after he's already implemented the action? And here's where Abai comes up to the to this point. So we're starting today with this new Gemara here of Maskif LeAbaye. And v'nisri b'hu b'toch k'dei dibur. So Gemara thinks that you can allow the first aid to testify, right? Every aid just requires two witnesses. So the first witness will give his testimony. Then the second witness would give his testimony. And we can give Masra immediately after the second aide gives his testimony. And that's called Toch Kedei Dibur. We'll talk about Toch Kedei Dibur a little bit more barichus, but first, just to get to the general concept.
Oh, but it means afterwards.
And it means afterwards, after he gave his testimony.
Thank you.
And since it's Toch Kedei Dibur, you'll ask the question, Mai Dahava Hava? And I have a simple answer to the question, Mai Dahava Hava? That as long as it's within Toch Kedei Dibur, the Edim have the ability to rescind their Edus. We give them a little bit extra time to think about it, and that time period requires a shtika, a tacit agreement on their part to validate their edus. So they really validate their edus by allowing that period of time to pass without backing down from their edus. So since they still have a possibility to back out of their edus, therefore the Hasra is very meaningful. And the Hasra says, look, you just gave testimony. If you don't rescind the testimony, you might be guilty of a very serious crime with very serious repercussions. Again, we have to ask ourselves, maybe because of when we spook them out with this Hasra, we put the fear of the Lord in their hearts, maybe at that point they'll rescind their edus simply because Mali Lutzarzu, they don't want to get involved. But apparently the Gemara is working with a psychology that before they give the edus, if you scare them, you're going to scare them away, they won't give the testimony. But if they've already given the testimony, for them to rescind the testimony, that they wouldn't do. But yet the Hasra is still valid, because the Hasra is telling them, if you don't rescind your testimony, these are the repercussions. And you may ask the question, well, what about the first witness? I mean, he didn't testify Toch Kedei Dibur. So the answer is that there's a whole string of actions here. The first testimony of the first witness, and then the testimony of the second witness, and we keep going on and on until the testimony concludes. There could be 100 witnesses. And it's all considered al pi din to be one maisa hagadah. It's one continuous testimony. And until the Toch Kedei Dibur of the last witness, any of the witnesses can drop out. But let's talk for a few minutes now about Toch Kedei Dibur. I have here a footnote in the Masifta in which he gives you a little bit of an overview of a sugya which is in a few places in Shas about Toch Kedei Dibur. First of all, just to define Toch Kedei Dibur in a literal sense, it means She'elas Shalom. Toch Kedei Dibur is the amount of time it would take to accomplish a She'elas Shalom. And here we have Machlokas Tanoim. What exactly is She'elas Shalom? So this is sugya Bava Kama, a sugya Makis. According to one opinion, Toch Kedei Dibur is what's called She'elas Rav Litalmid. This is the opinion of Rabbi Yossi. What does it mean, She'elas Rav Litalmid? A Rav will give a very short, abridged shalom. He says, Shalom Alecha. That's all the Rav is going to say to his Talmud. Then we have another opinion. That's the opinion of Acha Midivti. And he says, it's Kedei She'elas Talmud L'Rav. It's not the Rav who's saying Shalom to his Talmud, but rather the Talmud is saying Shalom to his Rav. Now, if it's Rav Acha that the Talmud is saying Shalom to his Rav, so it could be that he says another word, which is Shalom Alecha Rabbi. That's the opinion of Tosfos in Masechta Bava Kama, that according to Rav Acha, the period of Toch Kedei Dibur is a little bit longer than according to Rav Yossi, because since it's the Talmud who's asking Shalom from his Rabbi, he adds the word Rabbi. Again, we're talking about fractions of a second here.
That's really hard to judge real time, without a stopwatch.
Yeah, it's Shalom Alecha Rabbi. So you add, again, a fraction of a second. And that's how the Rambam paskins in Hilchos Shavuos, and that's also brought down in the Rav Shulchan Aruch in the Mishnah Berurah, that's called Shalom Alecha Rabbi. Now we have another opinion, and this is the opinion of the Aruch HaShulchan in the Maskana, and he says that, again, this is all based on the Gemara Bava Kama, that you have Arba Tevos. It's Shalom Alecha Rabbi Umori. So that's what we're mostly familiar with. And that's the period of time of Toch Kedei Dibra. The Talmud, when he's Makdim Shalom to his Rebbe, he says not just Shalom Alecha Rebbe, but he says Shalom Alecha Rabbi Umori. Now let's just ask a different question. Let's assume that Toch Kedei Dibra is X amount of time. That's 3 seconds, whether it's 5 seconds, whatever this you actually determine. You have to look in all the Sfarim of the Shiurim. But let's ask, why do we use this whole entity called Toch Kedei Dibra? How exactly does it work? So he quotes a bunch of Rishonim here in the footnote who say the following, that the whole institution of Toch Kedei Dibra is a Darabbanon. It's a rabbinic enactment. What motivated the Rabbanon to give a person that period of time to rescind his testimony? Or we'll find, for example, in other sugyas, not just rescinding testimony, but let's say I buy something from you, or I sell something to you. We're in the marketplace. Do I have a right to back down from the deal, either the buyer or the seller, after already the deal was clinched, the kinyan was made? And there too, Chazal say that there was a takana to allow you Toch Kedei Dibra. So the Rishonim say, why did they allow for this takana? It's a very weird kind of halacha, but I'll just read it to you. Again, if we have more time, we go into it. He says the following: the man is in the shuk, and he's about to buy something, and all of a sudden, his Rebbe goes by. Avar Rabo Biosa Shah. Just at that moment, his Rebbe passed him. Now, if you're not going to give him a little bit of slack here, a little bit of extra time, Lo Yuchal Lo Melo Shalom. So they made a takana. They said the following: go ahead and make your kinyan very quickly and say Shalom Alecha. And if you feel that you were pressured because you wanted to say Shalom Alecha, Rebbe Umori, and you didn't want to lose the kinyan, we'll give you the amount of time that it takes to say Shalom Alecha, Rebbe Umori, to back down from the deal. So again, you're in that pressure situation. You want to say Shalom Alecha to your Rebbe. You won't be able to do so because you're so involved in the kinyan. So we're going to say to you, you know what? Even if you're involved in the kinyan, we're going to still give you the opportunity to say Shalom Alecha Mori and still back down from the kinyan. That's the shita of Rabbeinu Tam and others. I'll just mention another shita here, that the Tam, the reason why the Chachamim made this institution of Shalom Alecha Rebbe Mori, was not because of sales, not because of testimony, but because of Kriyat Shema. And that is that in Kriyat Shema, they wanted to give you a time period in which you would be able to respond to your Rebbe if he passes by without being mafsik. So they gave you a period of time to say Shalom Alecha Rebbe Umori. This is called Sholem Ibn Ayira. Again, you have to know all the dinim, a very complicated sugya Masechta Brachos. But be that as it may, under certain circumstances, you're allowed to ask your Rebbe Shalom even in the middle of Kriyat Shema. Again, whether it means Bein HaPrakim, whether it means even in the middle of a Perek, for that we'd have to go through the sugya. So what they did was, the Chachamim gave him a possibility of saying Shalom Alecha Rabbi Umori without being mafsik. Why? Because it's such a short period of time, it's not considered a hefsek. And if it's not an interruption as far as Kriyat Shema is concerned, then we're going to extrapolate and apply, by analogy, other situations where it's not considered a hefsek. You're still involved in the action, you're still involved in the sale, you're still involved in the testimony. And finally, he quotes a Rabban in the name of Rav Av Bezdin, so that's an anonymous person who was ahead of the Bezdin at the time of the Ramban, and he writes that the halach of Toch Kedei Dibra is doraisa. It's not a takonas chachomim. And this has to do with a concept called gemiras das, which means that a person has a final decision in his mind. And he says that when a person engages in a certain action which has repercussions, he doesn't have yet a full-fledged gemiras das. He always allows himself a possibility in his mind to rethink it, you know, to ponder and decide whether he really wants to go through with it. And that amount of time is kidei sheva shalom, which is toch kidei kol kidei dibur.
Is that a dat yachid that's directed?
I'm not sure. I'll tell you why, because at the end of this long footnote, he quotes a tshuva from the Shaul Umeshiv. I'll tell you who the Shaul Umeshiv was in a minute, who brings a kasha on all the other Rishonim that Toh Kedei Dibur is the Rabbanon, and he really quotes proofs that Toh Kedei Dibur is the Oraisa. And for example, in our case of Eidus, we're certainly dealing with the Din Doraisa. Now the Shaul Umeshiv lived about 150 years ago. His name was Shaul Natazan, and he was quite a reliable posek. You get the impression, again, we have to do more research, that when the Ramban quotes this shita, the Ramban means to accept and validate this shita, which might mean that we accept the shita that Toh Kedei Dibur is Doraisa. But basically, Toh Kedei Dibur is halach of Chazara, and we give you that extra slack, that extra time period after the action was done to be chozer. And in the case of Hasra, Abai claims, that gives us a possibility to give Hasra for Edim despite Rava's inhibition. Rava was inhibited because he says you're going to scare the living daylights out of the Edim. You know, who's going to want to give testimony after Hasra? So the answer is, says Abai, we can actually give the Hasra post Edus after the Maisa Agada. And as strange as that sounds, because my davahavo, how can you give a person asra after he's already done the maisa? The answer is that in the case of Eidus, we have a unique situation called chazara, that a person can change his mind and rescind his Eidus, and we give him that period of time called toh kedei dibur. So if we fit in the asra immediately after the Eidus, as soon as the aid is, you know, responds to his last interrogation or whatever it is that completes the Eidus, then asra. And the Asra now will continue for a period of time called Toh Kedei Dibur. So after the Asra is given, we wait this, let's call it 5 seconds, and we see what he does. If he rescinds his Eidus, that's fine. Then we have no Eidus. If he lets it go by without rescinding his Eidus, then he forfeits the possibility of Chazara. And the reason for that is because Kevin Shehigin Shumen Echosu Magin, once you give your testimony and the Toh Kedei Dibur period of time has passed, you can no longer subtract from your testimony, you can't add to your testimony, you cannot change it in any way. And then the testimony becomes valid, but now he has Asra. And if he has Asra, when the Torah goes ahead and tells us that in the case of Edim Zomim, he pays Mamon, so it means that that's going to be a proof that at least in the case of Edim Zomim, the choice between Malkus and Mamon, you pay Mamon. And this takes us back to Rabbi Eliezer's point of view, that Edim Zomim, Mamon, Mishalmi, and Milka Lo Laki is based on the fact that there is no possibility of Malkus. Says Abai, no, there is a possibility of Malkus. You, Rabbi Eliezer, wanted to suggest that there's no technical way you can engineer a Hasra, hence there won't be Malkus. Says Abai, we can engineer a Hasra. The Hasra is going to come after the Haggadah. And basically what that means is we're going to go back to our original principle against this Rabbi Eliezer that we're learning today, which is called Beferish Rivsa Torah Edim Zomimim Lamamon. And that's based on the Pasuk Miyad Liyad, Dovra Nitan Liyad Liyad. Now Rav Acha Bereid Rav Ika has another possible way of engineering a Hasra in such a way that we don't have to worry about Rava's inhibition, that we're going to scare him away. How? Maskif lo Rav Acha Bereid Rav Ika v'nisri behu meikara, will give him the Hasra even before he comes into Bezdin. We have a problem because he may forget his Hasra. The Hasra always has to be immediately before the Maisa, because otherwise he could always claim, I forgot the Hasra. And the answer is, Nirmas Burimuze. What we're going to do is when he comes into Bezdin, we're going to indicate to him that we already gave you the Hasra. We're going to jolt his memory on the side that maybe his memory is a little faulty. But we're not going to scare him away with the full-fledged Hasra. That we gave him before he even came into Bezdin. So he knows what's going to happen if he testifies falsely, perjures himself. He had Hasra. The only problem is if we give him Hasra, you know, with the full brunt of the severity of his actions and the repercussions, he's going to be scared away. The answer is, all we're going to do is give him a remiza some sort of indication that'll remind him of the Asra that was given him. But it'll be Belashon Raka. Belashon Raka means in a very soft language, and it's not going to scare him away.
So this is actually a two-stage process.
Yes, fascinating. According to Abaye, it's a one-stage process. Just it takes place after the Haggadah. According to Rav Acha, it's going to be a two-stage process. The real full-fledged Hasra is going to take place an hour before he gives the testimony. But then we're going to have to just obviate the problem of forgetfulness. And we're going to say we're going to just give him a remiza and say, you remember what we spoke about earlier? You know, he'll nod his head. And that indicates clearly that he hasn't forgotten. And hence, we accomplish all our goals. We have the Asra on the one end, and the other end, we don't scare him away. Now, in the note here, he quotes the Sheet of Gubetzes as to why Rabbi Eliezer was not impressed by these two questions, the objections of Abaye and Rav Acha. How could Rabbi Eliezer say, no, there's no possibility of Asra? There is a possibility of Asra. So he says the following, Afal Gav, even though Rabbi Eliezer would have to agree, Sheshayach Asra Liachara Edus, Tokede Dibur, O Bishasa Edus Aide Remiza, so Rabbi Eliezer doesn't deny these two technicalities, these two ways of logistically engineering the Asra, Mikomakom nevertheless came into Lo Shayach Bu Asra Kodema Edus Kishara Verusheva Torah. This is not your classic Hasra. Classic Hasra is before you do the action, and it's a full-fledged Hasra right before you do the action. That we can't do in the case of Edim Zomistaver. He's explaining Rabbi Eliezer, Shekshiyesh Bahem Chiv Mamanu Malkis Yishalmu Velo Yilku Al Yidei Hasra Zu. He's saying the following, that this Hasra is a fallback position. It's not the real Hasra. It's a kind of, you know, if you have to plug it in, this is the kind of Hasra we can plug in, but it's not the Hasra that the Torah had in mind. And what's going to be the nafkamina? Well, look, if there's no other punishment, just for that one punishment that's written in the Hasra, that's indicated, then we'll give him the punishment. There is Hasra. Technically, we've solved the problem of Hasra. We've communicated the Hasra to the Avarya. But if there's another punishment that results from this same action, since the Asra is not your lechatchil, your perfect ideal Asra, therefore we're going to give the other punishment.
I'm afraid I didn't understand that.
Well, it depends on what level, on a simple level or a more profound level.
Well,
if you're asking for a more profound explanation, I'm not sure I understand it either. So we're in the same boat, you and me, Chaim. But on a simple level, what he's saying is the following. There's Asra Suga Aleph, you know, like you go to the store, you pay $50 for a shirt that's Suga Aleph, it's perfect shape. And then there's Asra for Suga Bet, you know, you get away with paying $25. He says in Asra, the perfect Asra is the Asra that takes place with a full Hasra. We warn him about everything and all the repercussions of action right before he implements the mice. That Asra is impossible at Edim Zomer. Rabbi Eliezer is going to make a big deal of that. He's going to say, any other engineering that you come up with Asra, after the Edim Asra, way before with the Remiza, all that is a b'dievet fallback position for Asra. Meinaf Gemina, even if it's a secondary Asra, it's valid. The answer is, in a case, which is the case of Edim Zomer, and two Edim testified against Reuven, Yitzchak, Masayim, Zuz, Teshimon, and now we find out these Edim are Edim Zomer. So here in this case, we want to do two things to the Edom. Number one, we want to give them Malkus for violating Losana Breachei Shaker. Number two, we want to give them a monetary penalty to satisfy, so to speak, the Nidon who stood to lose Masayim Zuz. So the Torah says, Kedei Rishasa. The Torah says, we can only give them one punishment. Which punishment should we give them? So there's a pressing argument in favor of Malkus, because Malkus is the more severe punishment. We all give the more severe punishment. But in this case, maybe there's something a little bit less than the severe punishment that he deserves, because the Asra is not exactly the Asra that we really wanted. So again, if there's no other punishment involved, we're going to give him that punishment based on the Asra. But if there's another punishment involved, even if it's a lower punishment, we're going to take into consideration that the Asra was not a full-fledged Asra, and we're going to alleviate the full-fledged punishment and give him the secondary punishment, which is namely Mammon. So that's the Sheet of Rabbi Eliezer, and therefore he holds that if you want to know whether Edim Zomim should get Malkus or Mammon, I'm going to tell you that Edim Zomim as an absolute rule will pay Mammon, they won't get Malkus. So I don't need any Pesukim, I don't have to darshan the Yad Liyad, or I need him the Yad Liyad.
Why can't the Edom Zomim get Hasra? Why is it not possible for Hasra?
Well, no, it's not that it's not possible for Hasra. It's not possible to do your classic Hasra. Why? Because Rava says, that's, I think maybe you missed that before, but I'm not sure. Anyway, the Rava says the classic Hasra is going to undermine the whole institution, the whole enterprise of Edom. No, of Edom, in general.
Of
Avis. Of Avis, because every testimony requires Hasra for violating Losana Brachet Shaker, but that's going to completely torpedo, you're going to blow out of the water the whole institution of Avis. Because when you scare away an aide, his response is Ma Leva Litzarazu. And I can't, you know, I don't have to tell you how true that is in secular in the secular world, because
in general, that's it. I mean, but he's saying it's not just Avis' own. That's what I was trying to clarify. It's not just Edom Zomim could get
you're
Hasra.
Basically, undermining all Edoms, because if you're going to go with Edoms and Hasra, forget it. No one's going to come forward. And by the way, you know, there's a Mishnah in Sanhedrin of Kesed Ma'ayim Ala Edoms. You know, what do we say to the Edom at the time of the Hasra? A whole Mishnah. And it's a very scary business, because we say to the Edom that when the Torah gave us the pasuk losana, the whole world shook 400 amos or 400 amos, and we say to them that you're going to become the lowest of the low. God gave you, you know, a tzelem elokim, and look how you misused it. Somebody's paying you to give this edus, you know, the whole scary business. And if you give the brunt of the hasra the way it was formulated by the Mishnah, the question is who's going to give edus? And it's just not worth it. This is the mind your own business philosophy, you know, that's so true, especially in Western society. You know, as long as I'm not guilty and I'm not involved, I'm not going to get involved. But the Torah gave us a mitzvah to give avos, but at what cost? You know, we're still human beings, so we don't want to put ourselves, you know, put our neck out on the line. If you give me Hasra, I'm out of here, you know. And by the way, the whole purpose of Hasra is really to convince a person to stop what he's doing. That's why we give Hasra. I mean, it's also for the sake of punishment, but even before that, we're hoping that if this fellow is an Avariot, he's a Rasha, he'll hear the Hasra, and something will, you know, get the fear of the Lord in him. So in the case of Edom, if we do that, you can basically fold up all your folders on Edom. There won't be any Edom whatsoever. So the answer to that is that there is a way of giving Hasra for Edom. But here's where the Shita Mekubetzah says in the name of Rabbi Eliezer, to explain Rabbi Eliezer, that it's not the ideal Hasra. Okay. Now we want to move on. And Rava was the one who said that it's really impossible to give a Hasra for Edom. Abai, as we saw, and Rav Acha disagreed with him. But Hadar Amar Abaye. Abaye now comes back and he says, you know what? I want to drop the case against Rav. Lav Milsahi the Amri. You know what? There's something much more fundamental here going on. Meaning, Rav made a statement, we got to give Edom Hasra. But we can't do so for technical reasons. And Abai says, no, I can find a way of circumventing and solving those technical problems. Like, we'll give that Hasra after he gave the Edus, right? Says Abai, love Milsi Diyam. Forget about what I just told you. Edom Zomim do not need Hasra. Why? The whole premise of Rava's point was that you need a Hasra, and that's how Rabbi Eliezer derived the conclusion that since there is no Hasra, therefore he obviously pays Mammon, the Edom Zomim will pay Mammon. You know what? In this case, you don't need Hasra. That means that if you take, let's say there are 365 lavim in the Torah, 364 out of 365 require Hasra, but there's one lav in the Torah that doesn't require Hasra, we'll punish him without Hasra. And why is that? Because the Torah says, Kasha Zoma. The Torah says we have to give the Edom what they wanted to give to the Nidon. Now, according to their testimony, the Nidon was guilty of X. Well, did the Nidon actually get Asra? The Nidon himself didn't get Asra. Why should the Edom get the luxury of having Asra? He says, Kilo masrinim buhu lo katlinalu. Are you going to tell me that in the absence of Asra, we're not going to put them to death? Let's say in a capital case where they testified against Reuven that he killed someone? Could there be such a thing? Diinu, they, bo katil, they wanted to kill the Nidon by falsifying their testimony and saying that he's a murderer. And they wanted to kill him below Asra, because certainly this Nidon never got Asra. In fact, he never did anything. The whole thing was a fabrication. The inu ba asra, and they were going to say to the end, "Well, you're off the hook." You know why? Because you didn't get asra. Habeino, we require v'asisim lokashasom lasisiyach v'leka. You're not being fair here, because according to the Torah law, you have to give to the Edom exactly what they wanted to give to the Nidon. Notice we put the Edom in the place of the Nidon, as if the Edom were testifying against themselves. Well, in this case, when they would victimize themselves and accuse themselves of crime, if they didn't, the whole thing is a perjury, so they didn't violate that crime. There was never Asra. So what do you tell the Edom? Well, the Edom are off the hook because they didn't get Asra. Basically, Abaye is of the opinion that we can forget about Asra. Again, in this one particular Edom Zomim scenario, we can forget about Asra because the Torah says Kasha Zomim Lasos Liachiv. And if the Achiv didn't get Asra, why should the Edom have to get Asra? So now the Gemara says, you know what? Your question, Abaye, and your principle is very good, except I can prove to you, at least in one case, that this logic doesn't apply. Maskev le Rav Sama Breid Rav Yirmiyah. I'll ask you the following question. Ela me'ata Abaye. What are you going to say about the case of Ben Grusha and Ben Chalutza? Ben Chalutza, the lav mikash zomam komis ravi. Now let's just explain. If the Torah says in general for all Edom Zomimim that the Edom will suffer the punishment that they try to mete out to the Nidon, there's one exception to that rule, and that's Ben Grusha. And the first sugya, Masechet Makos, derives this from Psukim, that you cannot make the Edom, let's assume they're Kohanim, okay, in that scenario, into Chalolim, into Ben Grusha and Chalutza. Why? Because the Torah says there's only one way of becoming a Chol, and that's through a marriage between a Kohen and an Iser Kohuna. And the Torah says, Li'ochiv, but only Loch, but not in the case of Ben Grusha and Ben Chalutza. Is Mimela, now we're not applying the principle of V'asisim lo kasha zomam. What do we do in a case where Edom falsified their testimony and they testified about so and so that he's a chol? We're going to give them Malkus. If we're going to give them Malkus, then liboy asra. According to your logic, Abaye, they would have to get asra. Why do we do away with asra? Says Abaye, because v'asisim lo kasha zomam. But now we have a new parasha of a punishment for Edom Zomim, the parasha of Malkus, and that applies in the case of Ben Grusha. There's no kasha zomam. We do not make the kohanim into chalolim. Either you're born a kohen chalol, or you're not born a kohen chalol. You cannot become a Kohen Chol by virtue of as a punishment for some crime that you committed, in this case, perjury kasha zomim. No, you're going to get Malkus. Well, according to you, Abaye, in this particular case, he should get Hasra. The Edom who testified about Ben Grusha must get Hasra. Now, again, we're working with an absolute principle that when Edom come to testify, we don't give him a Hasra. But according to you, Abaye, in this particular case, they need Asra, because you can't derive from Kasha Zomim that we're gonna punish them without Asra, because this punishment here in the case of Ben Grusha, where we give Malkus to the Edom, is not based on Vasisim of Kasha Zomim. So what are you going to tell me? You're going to tell me that in the case of Ben Grusha, we had to give him Asra? On my cross, Abai says, you know what? Mishpat Echad Yielochem. The Pasuk tells me that there's going to be a uniform, absolute rule. That's called Mishpat Echad Yilachem. which means Mishpat Hashava L'Kulchem. In all cases, the law will be the same. And what do you mean by in all cases? So, I mean, here's a situation where there's an exception to the rule. But the answer is it's an exception to the rule. We go by the rule. The rule is established by Rove. Most testimony that Bezdin will accept and receive has nothing to do with the Ben Grusha Ben Chalutzis. In the classic Rove case of Edus, we say Vasisim Lo Kasha Zomam, and Abai derives from that pasuk that they don't need Asra. Now we have a din to be Mashbe, Mishpat Hashava L'Kulchem. We're going to take all the cases of Edom Zomim, we're going to equate them, and we're going to say that Edom Zomim don't need Asra. It's almost like a low plug. You're familiar with the low plug? But this is a Doraisa look that's derived from a pasuk.
So, in other words, beating them in the case of Ben Rusha Ben Chalutza, that like is Tofes Tramp on the other cases.
The absence of the requirement of Asra, we're going to drop that. That's a tramp, right? Yeah. We're going to take a tramp on all the other cases of Edom Zomim. We're going to say if the Torah applies in the case of Edom Zomim, the principle that you don't need Asra, we're going to apply that even where the original logic does not apply, namely in the case of Ben Grusha Ben Chalutz.
Is this verse the source of using Binyanav, or is Binyanav simply tradition?
No, again, the Gemara is really focusing just on this one particular case, that when the Torah went out of its way to add Mishpat Echad Yelachem in the parasha here in order to teach you that in Edom Zomimim we never need Asra. That's an absolute rule.
Okay.
Now keep in mind, Rabosai, that we had a discussion not only about Edom Zomimim, but also about Chovel, because that too is an exception to Rabbi Yochanan's rule of Loke V'Eino Mishalim. In the case of Chovel, the principle is Mishalim V'Eino Loke. And we had a principle called Beferish Ribsa Torah Chovel V'Chaver L'Tashlumin back in the day. And that was based on the pasuk that says V'Nosan V'Yado, right? It says Dover Anitei Miyad L'Yad. So now the Gemara wants to say the following. That, you know what? I can derive this conclusion that in the case of Chovel, you pay Mammon and you don't get Malkus from a Pasuk, which avoids, in other words, we can circumvent the need for that entire complicated drasha of Keni Nasein Bo. Right? That was back on Daflam and Beis and Beis. Right, Keni Nasein Bo in the parasha of Chovel, it says Keni Nasein Bo. Right, and the Gemara says Dover Sheish Bo Nesina Bayninu Mamon. So the Gemara now, in the name of Rav Shisha, wants to avoid that whole drasha. I'm going to give you a different source from which you can derive the conclusion that Chovel B'Chavero pays Mamon. And if he pays Mom and the Milky Lo Lucky, there's no Malkus. Because again, Kedei Rishosa means there's only one punishment, not the other. Mehocha, from this Pasuk. So we're now back in the Pasuk of the parasha Mishpatim of Ki Natsu Anoshim and Nogfui Shahara. So it means that Reuven was in a brawl with Shimon. He was about to kill Shimon, and instead Shimon ducked. And Nebuch, a pregnant woman, was behind him, and she took the brunt of the blow, the Yatzila down, she loses her children. But what about her? She herself. Will she survive or not? So we don't know whether she's going to survive. And we're going to find out a little bit later. So the Torah says the following, V'loye ason, if she survives and she doesn't die, then anoshi anesh, and he has to pay dmei volados. Now again, Rabbi Osai, what we're trying to determine now is a case of Chovel B'Chavero. If she survives, then basically the Avera here of Reuven is an Avera of Chavola. In other words, her life is in the balance. But what's also in the balance? What's in the balance is, what are we dealing with? Are we dealing with Chovel B'Chavero, Pen Yosef, or are we dealing with Ritzicha, with Lo Tirzach? And that's going to be determined by whether she survives. The Torah says,
wait, so you're categorizing the the abortion of her fetus is chavila.
No. I'm talking about the injuries to her body, right? If she survives, then you assaulted her body, and you have to pay damages as a chovel. Now, included in chavala is going to be the dmei vlodos.
Okay.
If she dies, then we're dealing with ritzicha. And the Torah says that if she dies in Mason Yeh, and then Lo Yeh Onish, there's no monetary payment. But that's because of Misa. I just want you to avoid one mistake, because I fell into this mistake. Keep in mind that Rav Shish is not addressing the question of Misa. He's addressing the question of Malchus. Why? Because he wants to know, what does the Torah say in a case where she survives? In the case where she survives, that's called chovel bechavero. He now violates the Iser of Ben Yosef. I don't mean now chronologically, but it's now becomes clear to us that the blow that he delivered to this Isha is a chavola. It's not a ritzicha, it's a chavola. And that's going to revive the issue of Malkos for violating chavola, which is Ben Yosef. But yet the Torah says that imiyah oson lo yeonish, implying that if she dies, then there's no payment. Okay, that doesn't prove a thing, right? If she dies, there's no payment. I want to know if she survives. What is the Torah saying? Well, the Torah is saying if she survives, then there will be payment. And yet, if she survives, we have a situation of what avera here, Rabosa, if she survives. Not lo tirtzach, but chavala. Correct. Lo Yosef. Ah, here's a case where lo Yosef is violated. He should be getting Malkus, this Reuven, but instead the Torah says that he pays. Right? He pays Dmei Vlodos in this case, or any other chiyuvei chavala. Even though he's chayev Malkus. Now, how does Rav Shisha know that he's chayev Malkus? You could only assume he's Chayav Malkus if there was a Hasra for Malkus. But again, what happened over here? Reuven was about to kill Shimon, and instead, mistakenly, he killed Leah. So if he killed Leah, he's going to be Chayav Misa.
Right.
And therefore, the Torah says, Lo Yeonish. If she survives, then what? Then there's Chayav Malkus? What do you mean Chayav Malkus? We thought that Reuven was about to kill Shimon. So we gave him Asra for Misa. We said to him, listen, buddy, if you take that, you know, that stick or that metal rod and you bludgeon him to death, you're going to be put to death under the violation of Lo Sirtza. As it turns out, he didn't violate Lo Sirtza because Shimon ducked and Leah survived. Now, the Torah says you have to pay damages here. Okay, pay damages. You're a chovel b'chavera. You assaulted Leah. You have to pay damages. What does that have to do with Malkus here? Where does Rav Shisha see in this case Malkus? And the only time you chayev Malkus is that if there was a hasra for Malkus. But here, what hasra did they give him thinking that Reuven is about to kill Shimon? Yes. Hasra for Misa. They never gave him hasra for Malkus.
Can you give two hasras at the same time?
That's a good question. I don't know the answer to your question. The Gemara seems to assume no, that this is only one Asra that we're dealing with. So now the Gemara wants to analyze, was there Asra Bechlal in this case? You know, I told you that they give Masra for Misa because they say that Reuven, you're about to kill Shimon. So the Gemara says, yes, there definitely was Asra. How do I know there was Asra? So we have to read the whole Pasuk. The Pasuk says, etc. Then it says, "V'im ason yiyeh," and if she dies, "V'nasata nefesh tachas nefesh." And the Gemara is assuming now that means that Reuven is going to be put to death for the crime of murder because she died. Frek the Gemara, what do you mean? The Torah says, nefesh tachas v'nasata nefesh tachas nefesh. How is that possible? Heichidami idelo asru bei amai miktal. It's impossible to say that if Leah dies, then Reuven is going to be put to death. If Reuven didn't get asra, there's no way, no how you can put someone to death without asra. Again, you have another issue here, which Rashi is going to raise. We'll see that in a minute. How can you put Reuven to death even if Leah dies? Reuven had no intention of killing Leah. And that's going to be the whole sugya of his kavin la'argazem argaz acher. A person had a kavanah to kill one person, instead he killed another person. But let's assume that he's also a murderer. Even though he killed the wrong person, since he had kavanah ritzich and he killed someone, he's going to be put to death. But hechidami, idlo asri be'av my mikdal. If there was no asra, how could we put him to death? Elapshita di asru be. It must be that they warned him that he's going to get the electric chair if she dies, or in this case, if Shimon dies, because that's what they anticipated. But it doesn't matter who died, whether it's Shimon or Leah. Says the Gemara, then he got asra for Malkus. Not exactly the way Asher said it, because they gave a double asra, but it's an implicit asra. It's what I call a latent asra, and that's called the principle of musra l'davar chamur, havi musra l'davar akal. If you give asra, in this case for misa, which is called chamur, then included in asra is any punishment that we can mete out to you that's equal or less than that punishment. In this case, Malkus. The Gemara is assuming, which I think you'll all agree intuitively, that Misa is much more chomer than Malkus. As painful as Malkus is, at least I'm survived. And yet the Torah says, V'yomer achman lo yeh ason anoshi anesh, which means the following, that if she survives, then he pays money. What do you mean he pays money? If she survives, then he's chayv as a chovel, he should be getting Malkus. How can the Torah say in this case that despite the fact that there was asra for Malkus, we're going to make him pay onoshi onesh and venosan lavi anara? What was it say? Baal isha venosan bepliwim, right? That he pays the bay vlod. Why does he pay the bay vlodos? He should get Malkus. From here, we have to derive that in the case of chavola, instead of getting Malkus, you pay mamon. Does everybody have it?
Mm-hmm.
So we'll stop here. We're up to Maskifle Rav Ashi. Mamash at the bottom of Lag. Maybe I'll ask you for a pencil, Asher, if you have one. Okay. Great. Let me give this back to you. And that's where we'll end for today.